In this week's Capital Connections, the topic is a federal Affordable Care Act, commonly called Obamacare. U.S. Senator John Tester said Monday at the Capitol, repeal is imminent, but a replacement isn't ready.
My position is if you can come up with a better system, I want to see it, and I'll probably support it. But make it better in actuality, not in words. I mean, we're really good at throwing around catchphrases in Washington, D.C. The truth is that people's health care is too important for a catchphrase. We need to make sure any program that's put up increases accessibility, increases affordability. Why? Because I live in a town of 600 people. That little medical center there was built about 50 years after the homesteaders came to the area that where I farm. If we do things in Washington, D.C. that cause that health care center to close up, we will have not done the right thing, and that if once closed, it's doubtful they will ever come back. So we need to do things that move the ball forward when it comes to health care. There are way, way, way too many examples of people getting sick that would get kicked off of health care under the old system, people who had pre-existing conditions that couldn't get health insurance to begin with, too many seniors dropping into the donut hole and not being able to have the money and had to make a choice between paying heat, food, and prescription drugs. And the whole idea behind the Affordable Care Act was to try to fix those problems. It fixed many of those problems. Certainly didn't fix them all, and we need to work together to fix the problems that currently exist. I think that's the way forward.
I'm Jackie Yamanaka. In response, there's a working group discussing what to do if the ACA is repealed. Senate Majority Leader Fred Thomas will talk about that panel and its charge. But first,
at this time, I want to welcome Senator Ed Buttrey of Great Falls. And the reason I asked to visit with you is because you're the major driving force behind Montana's Medicaid expansion program from the 2015 session, commonly known as the HELP Act. And so I wanted to sit down and visit with you. And before we talk about the future for Medicaid expansion, the HELP Act, let's kind of just remind people some of those key elements that were so important to you that were just tied to Medicaid expansion.
Great, thank you. As we've talked about before, I've always viewed the HELP Act as an economic development program, a very focused economic development program for folks living in poverty. And we quickly realized that if we were going to have really any economic development program and have people have success and progress within the jobs market, they had to be unaddicted, they had to be mentally and physically healthy. And so we came up with the idea to tie economic development and health care together. And that was really the genesis of the HELP Act. And what we also were able to do in the Act is we incorporated some pretty heavy tort reform, some legal reform, and these were items that as Republicans we'd been trying to get passed in law since I think well before the Schweitzer era. And we managed to get that done. We added a healthy dose of health care reform across the board, all programs, not just the Medicaid expansion population. And we really beefed up an economic development system that would identify barriers to employment, get people to work, and ultimately get them off the act. Because we knew in the sunset, we were somewhat visionary in a lot of the things we did. It's actually, I think the changes at the federal level are going to actually make the HELP Act much, much stronger. And we set it up for that to happen. We set it up with a sunset date so that we knew we had to readdress it. That was in anticipation of a executive change at the federal level, which is what just occurred.
Right, and will occur.
And will occur. And so we tried to set it up so that it was long-standing and it could survive. And we set it up so that it has to be, the idea with the Economic Development Program is that it takes people off of the HELP Act through success in the job market, getting them jobs where there's benefit or to an income level where they can buy their own health care. And if we can, we know the population has skyrocketed up. Now the effort of government has to be to drop it back down through economic success and make it self-sufficient. So when we get block granting or whatever comes from the federal government way down the road, we can continue a program, but it's self-sufficient and doesn't put an additional burden on the taxpayers.
So now we've had not 2 years, you know, maybe a year and a half, to be very generous, of some individuals that this is the first time they've had health care.
Right, really a year.
Right, really right. A year, because it took, you know,
it took us a year to get it implemented.
And everything. So, you know, you've got all of these tens of thousands, really, of Montanans who now are on this program, and they might be wondering, now what? You know, given all of the changes that are happening at the federal level. as well as the state level. And so here we are sitting in your office, and I say to you, what do you say to those Montanans?
Well, whatever happens, it's going to be a drawn-out process. And I've got my ear to the ground in Washington, and the even amongst the Republican Party, the direction is really heading down towards, we know we have to repeal the ACA, which I'm 100% in support of. I'm a supporter of repeal. I think it's a terrible law and it needs to be replaced. But they are now saying, but we've got to have something to replace it. We just don't know what exactly that's going to mean now. We don't know what exactly the funding mechanism is going to look like. But what one of the first stages is sure to be is that they will remove some of the barriers that occur between states and CMS, where CMS has dictated to us in a one-size-fits-all of how we do business with our health care. We set the HELP Act up to be adaptive to that. The word on the street and what the feeling is that in relaxing of those waiver barriers, we're going to be able to put more strength behind our economic development program. The state is now getting calls from the U.S. Department of Labor and from other U.S. agencies saying, hey, we've seen the HELP link, the economic development part of our plan. We want to use it as a model for both the feds and for other states because they get it. People are finally starting to understand that you have to couple healthcare and economic development together. For a person to be successful, they just have to work together. So I think we can tell them there will be an implementation, a phase-in. We may get to add a little bit of strength to the HELP Act in requiring people to take some part of the HELP Link program, maybe to take the assessment and find out if they're capable of working, and if they are, there may be a requirement to do some sort of work. But again, that gets them financially independent and off the HELP Act. I think we're going to be able to do a little bit more as far as the asset testing to find bad actors, to make sure that people are paying their fair share and that no one's cheating the system. When you add all those things together, which we already have it adaptable to do, and all the legal and medical health care reforms that we put in the bill, I think that this is a tremendous opportunity in the short term to actually strengthen the ability of the HELP Act.
Do you think there may be changes in the funding? Because, again, you know, it was Medicaid expansion. It was all part of the ACA. The state of Montana can't afford, you know, just picking up this program itself out of the state's general fund.
No, we certainly cannot. Now, we've been sending $570,000 a day to the ACA. The ACA is a fund. They're not printing money for that fund. What they do is the states pay in, and that's used to pay the benefits. Now, when they run short, which they have, then they look typically to the exchanges, and that's why you see the deductibles rising up, the cost share rising up for the people that are on the commercial exchanges. And that's really kind of been counterproductive because these folks have insurance, but they can't afford the co-pays or deductibles, so they're not paying it to the medical providers anywhere, and we're kind of back where we started. That's a different population from the HELP Act.
Correct.
There's two parts of the ACA, the expansion and the exchange. But I think that, you know, we have sent a ton of money to Washington for the ACA. I believe there'll be some sort of block grant funding that will come back to states, and states will have the ability to decide how they cover their population, what the requirements, the prerequisites, all of that I think will come down to the states, which is the right way to do it. We're a frontier state. The rules here shouldn't be the same as in California, Arizona, anywhere else. When they do that, if we're allowed then to keep the money that we've been sending to the ACA, then we have to look at how much money we're going to have to serve our citizens. And at that point, that's really when we have to adapt whatever plan, the HELP Act or whatever we want to do, to match the money, because we want it to be revenue neutral. However much we have to put into the program is what should go out. Because ultimately, the people have demanded, and they're right, that whatever solution we come up with, it has to be affordable, and we can't continue to put additional burden on the taxpayers.
Certainly, some of your Republican colleagues they don't like the concept of expanded Medicaid. And there's been a bullseye on it and maybe dismantling it. Are you feeling that during the 2017 session?
Not really. I think maybe even some of the other go in the other direction. You know, as Republicans, we can't bury our heads in the sand and ignore the fact that we have a graying population, the gray tsunami, ignoring the fact that we have an incredibly large drug-addicted population. We have a population that before the HELP Act was getting health care. They were just getting it for absolutely free. They were getting it in the ERs, which is five times more expensive than going through the front door of the hospital. And we implemented a system where they're paying for at least part of the health care. They're getting preventative care, so we don't have this huge chronic drug addicted, mentally and physically ill population down the road. So we could bury our head in the sand and say we're just going to ignore this, we're not going to have anything to do with the federal program, and just continue down that path and continue to send a lot of money to DC. I think people are coming around now saying, look, we would love it if people were all self-sufficient, responsible for all their needs. We do as government have a role though to protect the most vulnerable. And if we can do it in a fiscally prudent manner that's not putting huge burden on the taxpayers, there is value in that. And we've seen tremendous savings over this past year to the state because of the HELP Act. It will take certainly a number of years before we find that there's less ER use. We find that there's less chronic illness for people that just can't recover and become a burden on themselves, the family, and the state. It's a long-term commitment. But within the HELP Act, the Economic Development Program, I've received latest numbers from Department of Labor, and for people that were unemployed, which is a very small amount of people in the HELP Act, 40% of those people are now have found jobs due to the HELP Link. And for people that already had employment that joined the HELP Act, through the HELP Link program, they are now receiving on average 72% higher wages. And many of these jobs that have been created have been in the healthcare industry. And guess what? These people, once they get some minimal training, go to work for a healthcare system, they get health insurance and they're off the HELP Act. So it has been a great success. Certainly, we had to build the program with a very lousy set of tools given to us by the federal government, just like we do in too many ways. We get a horrible toolbox full of old rusty tools and we do the best we can. We can't bury our heads in the sand. We have to do the job we're sent here to do. As those tools change, and we get to buy our own tools, and we get to decide how to use them. It is a really, really positive thing for Montanans and for really citizens of any state.
So in just the year, really, that the HELP Act has been up and going, what do you think in this session needs to be done to maybe remove that sunset and have it go on?
Well, I don't want to remove the sunset. I want to force us, at the very minimum in 2019, to look at the entire program. By that point, we would have seen the changes stabilize at the federal government, I hope. I mean, government can't move that slow, hopefully. But that it forces us to look at it and say, okay, we've adapted it the way that the law was built to be adapted, which is really visionary for the folks that supported it. But now we need to look at how to redo the whole system based on funding, based on whatever new federal rules we have, and based on the needs of our population. So, I mean, we did it right. We didn't set up something that said we're going to force this down your throat and go down forever. We forced the future legislatures and government to address it and to adapt to it. And we built it in hopes that we would have an administration change in Washington, which we did. We built an economic development program, which we'll only strengthen. We built reforms, which we are strengthening. This session, obviously, the vast, vast majority of changes will happen after we've gone home. So we have to set processes now, and this healthcare working group that we have, a lot of it is going to be process-related work on how we set ourselves up to come back periodically as these changes are implemented and very quickly and efficiently adjust state processes and laws to match whatever the new strategies of the federal government are. So we know we anticipate we're going to have to come back a few times, not just for health care, but for other means. So how can we set up things to make sure that we're very quick to react once these changes are in place?
So that's, I guess, going to be the challenge. I'm guessing of not only the legislature in your official work, but also, is it a topic of the working group?
It is. It's one of the main topics of the working group, is because we don't want to come back here and then spend a day suspending rules and figuring out how to set committees up. And, you know, we want to have a strategy and have everything ready to go so that when we call ourselves back to work, we come in, we do our job, we get out of town. And we don't waste any money. We're very efficient with what we do. That's a lot of it. Now, if we are also working to make sure we're very proactive, if we see changes coming, or if we have a very, very strong belief of certain changes coming, that we could even potentially pass laws that would take effect at a later date that would implement those changes. But we would have to have a very high level of assurance of what the specifics are of the changes coming. So we're looking at it. How can we, without spending a whole bunch of extra taxpayer money, quickly change the state to match what we're allowed to do per the federal government?
I'm sorry to say we've run out of time for this segment, but because this is an ongoing issue, I hope to visit with you about Medicaid expansion and as the changes are rolling in.
Yeah, anytime. And I'm working a large, complex health care transparency and benefit solution, so that maybe could be talked about in the future as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Senator Buttrey. I want to welcome the Senate Majority Leader, Fred Thomas. Thank you so much for sitting down in your office and chatting with me.
Jackie, it's my pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Well, one of the issues that certainly is an unknown during the 2017 session is what is going to happen to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and you have organized a working group to begin, I guess, contemplating some of that. Can you talk a little bit about how you decided to create this working group and who would be on it?
Well, absolutely. So part of the problem that we have, and I'll go into this just so you give a background of why we think we should work on it now, and that's that we'll meet between now, January, through the middle of April, and then finish this session. And knowing that the Congress may or may not have acted on a replacement of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it's called, they may not have replaced it if they've repealed it by then as well. So given that time frame that we'll be done here before they may have acted, or given the guidelines that we would respond to in this state, I thought, well, let's do everything that we can while we're here, preparing legislation that we could either put in place while we're here if they act timely, or if they don't, we will have had legislation that has been vetted to some degree with some thought and idea built into it that we could then come back to finish this session later on in the year, and or come into a special session and address these issues and put legislation in place to take care of Montana health care, insurance, and other elements of this whole that are touched by the ACA, Affordable Care Act. So that's our general idea, is be prepared, be proactive, and work on it versus well, now what? When Congress acts, and then we say, well, we got to go back to the drawing board. We'd like to have some things prepared before we leave here in April.
Who's on the committee? Who's on the working group?
Yeah, good, great. So first of all, what we did, that we had the new insurance commissioner, the auditor, is going to head that in some sense. He has assigned that to Chris Hansen, his chief legal officer, who's a former state senator from Havre. And so she's going to lead this officially, and will do an able job. Then what we've done is we've asked people from kind of interest groups, you know, insurance and state senators and whatever, anybody that would like to join and talk to us, you know, start in on this. We've asked that interested parties to come. And we had kind of a full room that first day. And now I think what we'll do is we'll formulate the committee more officially but invite everybody that would like to participate as well to take it all in. That's kind of who's on it. We'll have policy and legislators. There'll be some insurance company people. There'll be some insurance agent type persons that know healthcare insurance significantly. We'll have people from both sides of the aisle. It'll be bipartisan. We will have people from the consumer side of the world, and in essence, even though us legislators do represent consumers, I mean, I I'm elected by 20-some thousand Montanans. They're all consumers, so I represent consumers as well as every other legislator that would be at that table.
So how are you going to let, you know, the public know? They might hear this and say, you know, I think I'd like to just sit in on one of these meetings and observe.
Well, probably what we'll have to do is, I know that we announce committee hearings and meetings here in the legislature, and there's a formality of how we do that with like at least a 3-day notice. So probably what we'll have to do, pardon me, probably what we'll have to do is to kind of notice it somehow and announce it on the floor of the Senate and the House, and you know that so many days ahead of time there'll be a meeting of this working group, such and such a time and place.
So basically, are you thinking Wednesdays might be the day? You started on a Wednesday.
Yeah, I guess Wednesday's a good day. I'm not sure.
As good as any.
Yeah,
it is.
I
guess depends on when everyone can meet.
Yeah, exactly. And it's possible we might be able to. We had that meeting televised, so maybe we can do that again. It just depends.
What would you like, I guess, an outcome from this group?
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I see is that one of the outcomes of the ACA having been passed and having the difficulties that it is having, because premiums have gone up significantly so, and the design of this program is to some degree it's something like what we had in Montana before, which we called the Montana Comprehensive Health Association. But here it actually worked, and so somebody that could become uninsurable could use this program. The coverage was good, the prices weren't bad for coverage, the premium, and it was subsidized by other policy payers through the insurance companies. So when you take that very little basic concept and you broaden it out, though, I mean the trouble with that and the trouble with the ACA is it can become a spot for people to go and get insurance that are unhealthy, you know, and for good reason. I mean, we have it because they need insurance and they want it and they will pay. But the people that, as the premiums go up, the people that are healthy as a horse or young and healthy, they drop out. And that then is the death spiral that we all talk about, where premiums then keep going up. And then less people insure, they drop out more and more. It just, premiums go up, people get out. Premiums go up, people get down. And that's the death spiral of it all. So we didn't have that bad of luck in Montana in this regard. But if you take that very basic premise and you say we're going to broaden that across the whole insuring public, not Medicaid, not Medicare, and you broaden that base out to where it includes, you know, small business, big business, individuals, farmers and ranchers, whoever it might be, and then so that you can then cap the loss. So you buy insurance across the board and everybody that does that, whether it's small group, large group, etc., and then you cap a loss in this mechanism so that no matter who you buy your insurance with, there's a cap on the loss that they incur on a claim of an individual in a year's time frame. And then you take the excess from that and you dump it into a reinsurance fund or a catastrophic loss fund that everybody involved subsidizes.
So what I'm hearing you say is that basically this committee is looking at making sure people don't lose insurance.
Yeah, because one of those key things that the ACA did was it said we're going to move away from underwriting people in the sense of we're going to review their medical history and maybe insure them or not, or exclude things from their coverage. The ACA kind of culturally, in my opinion, moved us away from that and said we're not going to do that anymore. As not just the under it, but in the future, as the way we look at things in America. So you have to replace that ability to just get insurance with some other mechanism. And I think this one that we're laying out would be it. So anybody can get insurance. You need to buy it and pay for it. Congress will have a subsidy scenario through the tax code, I assume. And then, though, if you don't buy it, because it's not required, maybe your deductibles are higher once you jump in a year later or 2 years, maybe they're twice as high, and your copays are higher because you have not participated like everybody else. There needs to be a penalty to entering late, okay. In essence. That's only fair to the people that are buying it all the time.
So, and what was interesting, though, is you mentioned Medicaid, and one of the things that the ACA offered was Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
The 2015 Montana legislature passed, the governor signed, the HELP Act, which is Montana's unique version of Medicaid expansion.
Correct.
Do you see this working group also addressing that aspect as well? Because
well,
you've got all these new people now that have been introduced to, you know, I'm just going to call it insurance, health insurance.
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, and really the easy answer is no from a large perspective. And the reason is this. The scheme of that expansion is that it's primarily paid for by the federal government. And the most we would pay through starting in 2019, I think, is 10% of that cost. So if it's got an $800 million cost, we pay $80 million a year, and the feds pay $720 million. So those numbers are important because we don't have actually either number to spend right now. But particularly the big number of $720 million, if that were the exact cost. So that's our problem, is we don't have the money to pay for the insurance that those people or the costs that they're incurring in the expansion program now. So instead of that, what Congress is going to have to design, how do they deal with that expansion population and or anywhere they go? Because if they take the expansion population out, then we have people on Medicaid up to 100% of poverty line. And so from 101% up, I would assume, just in general, that there's a tax code system where there's credits that people can use against their health insurance premiums. You know, let's say it's, you know, you get $400 a month and I get $500 a month, depending on our incomes. I mean, you know, we use that to offset our premium for the health insurance. I'm assuming that's what they will do. That's always been in the material that you read about on all the proposed think tank things, whether it be Republican or Democrat. That's generally been out there, and with that structure, then you have it more in place for the current Medicaid expansion population. They would certainly be paying premiums. The more income they have, the more they pay.
Certainly,
all that business.
Certainly. Well, I know it's very early in the process, so I just wanted to sit down and, you know, let our listeners know about the working group, and certainly that their input probably will be solicited at some point.
So. Yeah. Well, we'd like that, and I think what we'll do is for like our next meeting announcement, there we have a Twitter account that's Twitter at MTSenateGOP. And then Facebook, the Montana Senate Majority. So we'll have those announcements on there at least, plus others, like on the floor of the houses, that sort of thing. But our main goal here is to be ahead of the game and prepare Montana's laws to deal with the changes that are going to come from the federal government in this regard. And we just want to be prepared as we can, even if we're ahead of the game.
All right, so with that, I am out of time, but I want to thank you so much.
Well, it's
Senate,
my pleasure.
Senate Majority Leader Fred Thomas, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jackie.
You've been listening to Capital Connections. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. Our theme music is by the Alex Nauman Trio. Capital Connections is a production of YPR News.